Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. Hey, who's driving your bus? Who's in charge of your relationships? And who is making you a better person? The answer is you. Hey, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio, and today you're getting my absolute, positively, the best interview I have ever done. Okay, it's with John Gordon, the John Gordon, the man, the myth, the legend, the author of The Energy Bus, which has sold over 2 million copies, and also the author of The Coffee Bean. He tells a great story about The Coffee Bean in this episode. You're not going to want to miss this. And he's the king of analogies. He's a negative guy turned positive, and I really resonated with that. He has amazing relationship advice for both your personal life and your business, all right? And then he's going to leave you with one killer question to ask every single day in your head so that you dominate in business and in life. All right, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio, and it doesn't matter where you're starting out today, you are going to get massive breakthroughs from today's show. Early to Rise Radio is ad-free and totally free because it's brought to you by my books. First of all, we had The Perfect Day Formula, which you get at freeperfectdaybook.com/podcast. Then we had the Wall Street Journal bestseller that you can get at freeunstoppablebook.com/podcast. And now, brand new, we have the Perfect Week Formula. If you go to perfectweekformula.com, I'll give you a free copy. It's on the way to you. Now, let's jump into it. This show is amazing. All right, I am here with the myth, the man, the legend, John Gordon. How are you, my man?
I'm doing great, Craig. How are you?
Great. How many books have you written?
20 now. Just came out with our 20th book.
That's really cool. And there's a couple that I want to talk to you about at the end. And I ask you my one weird question at the end. But first, tell us a little bit about The Energy Bus. People have heard of the book. Maybe they haven't read it. I was actually just I am friends with this girl on Instagram, as we all are, and I was going through her stories the other day, and she said, she posted a picture of your book. She's 23 years old, really smart, talented, ambitious girl, and she said, I'm reading this for the second time. The Energy Bus has helped people in corporations of all ages. What is it, and what's the big message of it?
Well, it's about a guy named George who's miserable and negative. His team at work is in disarray. He has problems at home, and he wakes up Monday morning to a flat tire. So he's just fed up with life. And he was really easy to write about, Craig, because he was based on me and my own personal struggles with negativity and adversity. I used to be really negative.
Yeah, and so that's, if I can just stop you right there, that was the thing I was going to really spend a lot of time on. Naturally negative John Gordon, people are going to be blown away when we talk about that. So I'll let you keep going there, John, and dive deeper into The Energy Bus. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, sure. People think I'm Mr. Positive, but I'm not. I was like this guy, George. And so he has this flat tire, walks inside, asks his wife to take him to work. She won't. That was also based on personal experience. And so he has to take the bus to work, gets on the bus, meets Joy, the bus driver. And she and a cast of characters teach him the 10 rules for the ride of his life that not only help him become a more positive person, but a better father, better husband. And it's about getting his team on the bus and moving in the right direction with a shared vision, focus, and purpose. And it's about the fact that everyone of us will have to overcome negativity, adversity, and challenges to ultimately define ourselves and our team's success. And so this guy, George, has to go from negative to positive as he learns these rules. And, you know, it came out in 2007, which is pretty wild to think about, that all these people are now reading it now. It's more popular today than it was last year, more popular than it was 10 years ago. So it's
wow,
been a,
congrats.
Yeah, it's been a really cool journey. It, you know, it was rejected by over 30 publishers. So the story in itself, as
I had, aren't all the great ones?
Yeah, it seems that way. I had to live it, right? I was rejected, rejected, rejected. I had this dream of writing this book, of making a difference. And if this book didn't make it, my career would probably have been over as a writer and speaker. And the fact that, you know, it came out. Well, after the rejections, finally John Wiley and Sons agreed to take it on. It comes out. Not one bookstore would carry it. I went on a 28-city tour, paid for myself. We had 5 people in one city, 10 people in another. You know, it wasn't very sexy at all.
For social media, so you can barely really leverage that like you could today.
Right. We were using my email list that hadn't, you know, where I started a newsletter. I started a newsletter back in 2002, one of the first to actually do that. And so we had a little bit of a list, but not much. And we were getting on local radio and TV shows. The book had become a huge hit in South Korea. So we were saying I was a big hit in South Korea. I was internationally known.
Really?
Internationally known is what we were saying. So people were like, hey, we got John Gordon here, is internationally known. And they were having me on their local shows, which would get some of the people to the events, but it wasn't successful at all.
What was the thing that made it popular? Was there one person who was influential that loved it in South Korea? How on earth did that happen?
What happened was,
track that back?
Yeah, I could track it back to a principal I met on the tour, had me come speak to their school. A business leader who came to see me, I wound up speaking to their company. Jack Del Rio got a hold of the book, the Jacksonville Jaguars coach at the time. He read it. He brought me in to speak to the Jaguars. Mike Smith was a defensive coordinator. He brings me into the Falcons the next year when he gets the head coaching job. University of Texas hears about it. I go speak, and Colt McCoy was a senior. They made it to the national championship that year. So all these little things like happen from person to person. Didn't become a bestseller until 6 years later. Now it's gone on to sell over 2 million copies around the world. So it's been an incredible journey.
Congratulations. And so what made you write the fable version of the book as opposed to something else? Were you, like, I'm thinking 2007, this is before I had ever heard of Patrick. Maybe Patrick Lencioni had written some books, or maybe it was a Robin Sharma who influenced you. How did you know to write the fable version?
Yeah, I didn't really know anything about Pat at the time. I guess he had written Five Dysfunctions maybe a few years even before I wrote The Energy Bus. But Ken Blanchard was my hero. He was my mentor. He wrote The One-Minute Manager. Yes. I went to Cornell University. He taught at Cornell. And so I had written 2 previous books before The Energy Bus. I didn't really talk about these. They weren't a success. They really weren't part of my life going forward. So once I wrote The Energy Bus, I sort of forgot those other 2 books. But those 2 books didn't do well at all. They were how-to books. And for me, I realized, you know what? People are not really reading this book. I was walking one day and I thought, maybe I should write a fable. Maybe people will read a fable if I write that. And that began this journey of what would I write about? And then one day I was walking, honestly meditating, praying, and the book idea for The Energy Bus just came to me. Boom. And I wrote it
like a bus.
Yes, it did, like a bus. I wrote it in 3.5 weeks.
Cool.
So I knew at that point, okay, maybe I'm meant to write fables, and didn't know if I could write another one, but I did, you know, shortly after that, I wrote the No Complaining Rule. And then I started on this journey of writing fables.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. Love it. Now back to George. George is a leader in a company, is a manager. Is that what he is?
He's a manager. He's not a top leader. He's like a mid-level manager trying to lead his team, and his team is not doing very well.
Okay. And he's more of a boss. He's like top down. And then he has like an Ebenezer Scrooge visited by the ghosts of bad management past sort of thing.
Well, yeah. Well, Joy is like this wise woman. Think of her like a heavier Queen Latifah.
Yeah.
And she is wise. She is smart. She has got great energy. And she's like, hey, George, I'm going to knock some sense into you. Start listening to what I got to say to change your life around. And so he tries to transform his marriage, his home life, and also his work team.
Oh, that's great, man. That's great. So now let's go deep on the negativity, because how on earth could this guy, I mean, you just, like even just your little Zoom icon, I mean, it's just like, this is like the happiest guy in the world, you know, super positive, but you say you're naturally negative. So talk about that and your family background and how this kind of threw you off a little bit.
Yeah, I grew up in a Jewish Italian family in Long Island, New York. So a lot of food, a lot of guilt, a lot of wine, a lot of...
Could you give any more stereotypical New Yorker, right? Long Island, that's great, dude.
Yeah, I had the gold chain, the tank top, the Camaro growing up. So I was like straight out of Long Island. My dad was a New York City police officer, undercover narcotics. So he was like this really, you know, badass tough guy, but a loving dad, but just like, hey, we're here to take on the world. The world's going to come at you. You have to, you know, kick the world's ass. This is what you have to do. My brother came home one day, I remember, and he saw a guy messing with my brother. My brother didn't defend himself. And he said to my brother, either you fight him tomorrow or you have to fight me. I'll never forget watching this. And my brother literally had to go fight this kid. And my brother kicked his butt. And it gave him some confidence, but he was so fearful and scared. He was forced to do this. So that's like the kind of environment I grew up in. We fought all the time with our neighbors, our friends. We, you know, it was a tough neighborhood. I grew up in this environment, a lot of negativity from my family, a lot of love, but a lot of negativity. And so I really struggled with it. And then,
well, you know, to be fair to your dad, I mean, he's doing the dirtiest work on the planet almost. Right. And it's like, how could he not be affected by that? You know, he loving dad, sure, but you go in and you see the worst that humanity has to offer. That's your default, whether it was his default or not prior. Like, hey, the world is going to throw some ugliness at you. And
that was,
I now live in these bubbles of social media, and you're like, hey, everything's great, but no, there really is some tough stuff. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, he really saw the worst. And you know what's funny? I'm getting all these calls from police departments now that want me to come and speak to police about positive leadership. And I know them. Like, I know that guy. I know that woman who's there and what they're dealing with on a daily basis. I know their perspective on the world. And so I really can go in and help them. And, you know, they don't have a lot of money, but I love to go do that because it's something that I can give back to what my dad gave all those years. So.
Yeah. And yeah, that's a ripple effect, right? Like, you go and help these cops and they become, you know, let's be honest, it's a different world than when your dad, when we grew up and when your dad was a cop and, you know, they make a mistake because they're having a negative day and all of a sudden it's on TV and you got, you know, protests and, you know, fair enough. And so what you do helps them, which then helps the community and you're having, that might be where you have some of your biggest impact, right?
Definitely that. And I work with a lot of school districts, which I really love to impact school districts and teachers and principals, you know, people who provide a service. It's a way to really give back and make a difference. The thing with my dad, though, I mean, he talks about that. Like, he would literally chase people and he would have to chase them for a mile or two sometimes. Yeah. And when he would chase them, he's like, we weren't nice to them when we caught them, right. You know, and in today's
run,
right. In today's world, he had a guy actually pull the trigger on a gun and it misfired against his head and it misfired. He turned around, grabbed his nightstick and bashed the guy's head in, you know, because he literally was almost shot and killed in that moment. Yeah. And so when you're dealing with the negativity, when you're dealing with a life and death situation, how can we expect someone like that to respond perfectly, you know, always, right? We can't. There are a lot of cops that make bad decisions today, and some of it is driven by prejudices and so forth. So we have to really look at that. But a lot of times when you're really fighting for survival, you're not always going to think positively. So I think that's an important thing. For me, back to my story, I was fighting for survival. I was trying to provide for my family. I was in a job. I worked in .com, for instance, that thought I was going to make my millions. And I was crumbling from the inside with fear, stress. I wasn't happy about what I was doing. And now I'm not sure if I can provide for my family because the .com is starting to really crumble. And from there, I was just a big jerk. And my wife had enough of my negativity. And she said, if you don't change, like, we're over, like, you need to change or our marriage is over. I'm leaving. And so that began this journey of thinking, okay, why am I so miserable? What am I here to do? Like, what is my purpose? What is my why? And how can I do that? And that's when writing and speaking came to me. So it really was a defining moment in my life that would impact the rest of my life.
Yeah. So what was the business you were doing in 2002 when you started the email newsletter?
So I actually had some restaurants at the time. I had a Moe's Southwest Grill. I was the first franchisee for Moe's in Florida. Wow. In Florida, we second mortgaged our home, $20,000 in credit cards to open up this Moe's. Like, not sure if we were going to make it even past the first week. We had no savings. I violated all business plans in terms of opening up this restaurant. You're supposed to have a certain amount of money saved up. And I didn't have anything else besides what we had. We put into it and just rolled the dice. You know,
What made you so excited about it that, you know, got you to do this?
Didn't really have a choice. I mean, the .com was crashing. And we had just moved to Jacksonville, to Ponte Vedra Beach, had this mortgage, had this house. And I'm thinking, what am I going to do if I lose this job? I was making $100,000 at the time. And I remember thinking, how can I make $100,000 in Jacksonville? There's not a lot of high paying jobs. So I thought, okay, I used to be in the restaurant business when I was young. I was 24. I opened up a bar restaurant in Buckhead, made it successful. So I've always been an entrepreneur, made it successful with a few other partners, became a really hot spot during the Olympics and in Atlanta. And so really, really exciting time. So I thought, you know, I'm pretty good at the restaurant business. Let me get back to that. Let me open up a place that I can manage, that I can run, that's not hard. I can make a burrito and provide for my family. So then I could start writing and speaking. So the goal was to open up this place knowing that I wanted to write and speak ultimately, but hopefully would make enough money to allow me to do that.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Now, so many people feel like they are surrounded by negative people. And you obviously had that defining moment. And, you know, when you get an ultimatum from your spouse, there isn't much stronger in life than that, other than your doctor saying, hey, you're going to be dead in 3 years if you don't change, right?
Yeah.
How do people feed the positive, particularly when they are surrounded by negativity? Because I'm always about, hey, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. I truly believe it. It's research proven. And people always come back to me and say, but Craig, but I spent, my relatives are this, my family is this, my friends are this. How do we feed the positive when we're the only person that's trying to be it?
Right. Everyone's saying today, you know, stay away from negative people. Well, if everyone stays away from negative people, how can we make an impact and transform them? Right. If we're all staying away from them, are they all just going to hang out together?
Yeah. And as if we're perfect, right?
Right. It's like, it's not doable. And so the first key is to understand. It's not a strategy. It's to understand that the power is inside you. The great analogy is this. When you put a carrot into boiling hot water, what happens to the carrot?
Carrot gets soft.
It gets soft. It gets weakened. You put an egg into boiling hot water, it gets hard. It gets hardened by its environment. So we can be like the carrot and get weakened by our environments, by the negative people. We can become hardened where we become bitter and angry. We don't care about people anymore. We don't like people. We can become like that. Or we can be like the coffee bean. And when you put that coffee bean into boiling hot water, that coffee bean is not impacted by its environment. Instead, it transforms the environment it's in. It leads from the inside out. It impacts from the inside out. And that's the power we all have. It's knowing that that negative person does not have power over you. Instead, you have the power to transform them, to impact them, and to impact the people around you. And maybe you won't reach that person. Maybe you will not make a difference in that person's life, but you won't let that person affect you. Gandhi said, I will not let anyone walk through my mind with their dirty feet. And you're not going to allow that person to walk through your mind with their dirty feet. Instead, you're going to impact the people around you. And I think I'm a great example of that, because with my family, I really did transform my family, my dad especially, and the people around me. It took a long time, but over time, my change within me impacted the people around me.
I think I tell people this all the time, and it's a great, another example of what I did, which is I call live and lead by extreme example. So people always say, well, you know, my spouse isn't into personal development or this, that, or the other thing. And I said, hey, listen, I grew up in Canada on a farm in a small town of Stratford, Ontario, where you play hockey and drink beer, you drink beer and then play hockey. It doesn't matter which order, eventually you're going to do them both. So enjoy. and you know, you're around these negative people. It was a factory town, all this sort of stuff. But, you know, I, for some reason, got into Arnold and bodybuilding and all that stuff. And I took it very seriously. Now I drank a lot, I'll be honest with you. But 6 days a week, I was a pretty good boy. And my friends saw this and they busted my balls on it, everything, you know. And then sure enough, here we are. Like, even when we hit 27 years old, some of my friends had seen me do this for a long time. They'd just be like, okay. And I was just going to keep on doing it, keep on grinding it out, living my healthy life. And now today, there's so many of them that are healthier than me. And, you know, I don't take credit for obviously all the hard work they've done, but I think that if I wasn't that way, they wouldn't have become that way. And so I truly believe, like, you can't force a horse to water and drink or whatever the saying is, but you can show them that a horse can go to water and drink and the horse is better off. And if you show that every single day for your life, some people are going to jump on board. Some people won't, but those that do, you know what? Now you got them on your side and in your corner. And so I think that's super powerful. And I really appreciate you sharing that story. And I love the Gandhi quote. I had written that down. But this is, I'll be honest, this is when you were explaining, when we did your podcast about the coffee being your book, which we'll talk about at the end of the podcast, I had heard the, you put a potato in water, it softens. You put an egg in the water, it hardens. I had never heard the transformative one. And that is so powerful that we do get to choose those things, right?
Well, I love that. I think about you, right? I think about the impact you're having. Here you were in Canada, and from the inside out, you're now impacting people around the world. My wife got your book. My wife loved your book before you and I even talked. She's like, right. was loving your stuff. And so now you're reaching someone in Florida, having an impact on them by the changes that you made from within you. But it really is about feeding the positive. Like, you have to wake up every day feeding the positive and weeding the negative. So the more we feed ourselves, the more we're able to feed others. We're able to be that coffee bean. So you have to make sure that you're filling yourself up with that positive energy that you now want to share with others. And the best advice I ever heard is from Dr. James Gills, the only person on the planet to complete 6 double Ironman triathlons. Wow. Which means you do an Ironman and then a day later you do another one back to back. And the last time he did it, he was 59 years old. And he was asked how he did it. He said this, "I've learned to talk to myself instead of listen to myself." He said, "If I listen, I hear all the negative, all the fear, all the doubt, and all the complaints. But if I talk to myself, I could feed myself with the words and the encouragement I need to keep on moving forward." So I think it starts with being someone who encourages yourself, who feeds yourself. And the more you change within you, you're now able to change the world outside you.
Like, I honestly think if people got nothing else from the podcast, it's that lesson of stop. Say it again, because you said it so much better. It's about not talking, not listening to yourself. It's about talking to yourself.
Don't listen, talk to yourself, because we're always going to have these negative voices that come in. We all have it. The fear, the doubt, the thoughts that say you're not enough. This isn't going to be successful. Your future is hopeless. The business is going to work. The marriage isn't going to work. We always have these negative thoughts that come in. And what you have to do is realize that those thoughts are lies. Just because you have a negative thought doesn't mean you have to believe it. Don't believe the lies. Instead, you speak truth to the lies. And the truth is, you have greatness inside of you. The truth is, you are here to do great things. The truth is, if you put your head down, you work hard, you stay positive, great things are going to happen. That's truth. And so you always have to make sure you're speaking truth to those lies.
So here's the thing is, I think that when people are listening to themselves, what are they doing? They're listening to, hey, this might happen and in the future, and it's fear, which is false expectations appearing real, right? And then if you are talking to yourself, though, you're talking to yourself in the present about, hey, you're great, this is what you've done. And it's more like Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. And, you know, I think this, I'll be honest with you, I'm going through some stuff in my own personal relationships where this information you've just given me is so valuable and helpful. I'm really grateful for having you told that story.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, my wife and I are actually writing a book right now called Relationship Grit. And it's about, you know, staying together and how two people coming together in any relationship, whether it's a friendship, a marriage, partnership, whatever it may be, you have to make sure that you are investing in the relationship together. And if when you change, the relationship will change. And more often than not, both have to change. One may have to change more than the other. Like in this book, we're almost done writing it, actually. My wife's like, "Wow, you sound awesome at the end." I said, "Yeah, but I sound really bad in the beginning." Right. I said, "Honey, you were always awesome. Like, you didn't really have to change that much. I'm the one who had to change." And my good friend Donald Miller, who does StoryBrand, says every movie, when you watch a movie, it's about the couple coming together at the end, like a man and woman coming together at the end to become whole, right? Yeah. But they have to sort of move towards each other in a compromise in some way. And more often than not, the man has to change more than the woman. Usually it's the man who has to change the most. And that's what we experience in our life.
Amazing. Which brings me to the question. So 2007, your wife gives you the ultimatum. And, you know, and like you said, she was always great. So maybe she didn't have to change too much. But how did she support you? Because this is powerful for anybody listening who's in a relationship, whether it's friends, whether it's work related, or it's their marriage, their partnership, and the spouse says, "Hey, you got to stop drinking, or you got to do this," or the boss says, "Hey, listen, you're smart, but the way you interact with people, how do you lean on somebody for support when because it is tough on our egos. And I feel the same way you do when I, you know, review my books. I'm like, wow, I was a real dick. You know, and it's like, I'm grateful for when people say to me, hey, you're a total different person than you used to be. But I'm like, you know, my negative mind goes to immediately like, wow, I was really, really bad to these people. And not that I, you know, I ever hurt somebody, but I was rude. I was just an introverted type person. I relied on that. And I was fortunate that I was able to lean on some friends. How did you, were you able to lean on your wife for support? And then what, give us a couple of nuggets from the upcoming book about how people who are trying to change can do so with the support of others.
It's knowing that you can't drive anyone else's bus, right? Going back to the energy bus, you can only drive your bus, but you can encourage the other buses, the other drivers along the way by the way you act. You can convince by your presence. And so by me changing, my wife actually started to see me change. And by me living it, it's only through living it, right? The word you say means nothing unless you actually put that word into action and live it. From there, she started to see the change, and that started to change us. So I think you have to show proof of concept. I did lean on her in terms of her patience, her love, her support. She saw me start this, doing this work and serving others and making a difference. I was no longer now a narcissist. I actually became someone who was now trying to serve others. That was a big part of my journey in my life. I was going on that tour saying it wasn't successful, but I was serving people when I was there. That was a really great heart check and a gut check to, was this real? Are you going to really live this mission? Going from place to place with no fanfare, but to make a difference. So she saw me doing that. She saw me serving at home. She saw me start to make a difference and being around the kids more and changing. So that helped a lot. And I think for couples, it's about coming together saying, okay, here are a few tips. What's our shared vision and mission? Every great team, I work with a lot of sports teams, you have to have a shared vision and mission. It's the same thing as a couple. Where do we want to go? And why are we going there? And are we on the same page going there together? You have to identify your common bonds. What do we love to do together? What brings us together? What do we have in common? And focus on those things, but also appreciate your differences, knowing that you're gonna be very different. My wife is really different than me. I'm hardcore. I work every day. I'm disciplined. My wife is spontaneous. I want the kids to go to bed every night at the same time. She's having a dance party at 11 p.m. In the kitchen with the kids. Yeah, that's like a great example of.
And she liked my book.
And she, well, no, she needs your book. Right. You know, no, she needs it. And she knew I was doing this podcast and she said, please ask Craig to help me. I need help. She goes, please, I need help, because she has trouble with discipline. She has trouble with the consistency on a daily basis. So I used to see that as a weakness, but now what I see it as her spontaneity, the kind of carefree person she is actually who I needed in my life.
Yeah, you're describing mine too.
Yeah, and at the time, I loved that about her, that she was like that when I first met her. Then we got married, had kids. I hated that about her because I wanted structure and my life felt like it was falling apart and I needed structure and she wasn't able to provide it at that time. And then fast forward, I now see it as the greatest strength that we had in our marriage because she was so different than me and we really complement each other. So I think it's really understanding that you're going to be different and the things that you're attracted to initially may not be the things that you like as you move forward, but make sure you're appreciating your differences. And here's the key, communicate, because communication builds trust, that generates commitment, that fosters teamwork, that delivers great results together. Where there's avoiding communication, negativity will fill it, and most relationships break down because of poor communication. So as long as you're talking about these things, you're going to improve. We went to counseling right before our marriage. We talked about this in the book, and that really helped a lot, going to counseling. And we laugh about it to this day because, like, my wife's Irish Catholic, and the counselor, we started fighting, and she went off, like, really quick, and he goes, Look at you. You go from like 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. And for the first time, I felt validated because I thought everything was my fault, right? And that helped us a lot. But she really was, I was the one who was more of the jerk. But that session helped, communication helps, and make sure that you're getting together, taking the time to invest in your relationship, because we live in a world where we're busy, we're stressed. And really, so often, the last thing we focus on is our relationship, is our kids. And we have to make them our biggest priority.
Okay. So, you know, we're doing this interview in December. You and your wife, what are the annual goal setting? Like, do you do a little retreat where you sit down? Do you sit down at the kitchen table? Do you take time where you and your wife sit down and plan out the vision for the next year? Do you do it more regularly? Do you also think like a 10-year vision? What is the Gordon plan for always being on the same page, even though there's slightly different colors of ink on the same page?
You know, I think we communicate so much now that we don't even really have like that meeting to kick off the year. The key sure. meeting that we have, we're actually not big on resolutions. You may not like that or not, but
I don't care about it, whatever people do. Yeah, it's just, I just want people to know what's right for them.
We're big on one word. So we pick a word for the year.
Great.
9 out of 10 people fail in their New Year's resolutions. But what we find is that one word sticks. So each member of our family, I have a daughter, a son. My daughter's just graduating college. My son is 19 now. We come together and we come up with our word for the year. So we have a family word, and then we have an individual word that we're going to live that year. And so last year, my word was expand. The year before that, it was connected. The year before that, it was still. The year before that, it was forgive. So each year, I pick a word, and I really focus on that word for the year, to live that word. We do have a family mission statement, so we try to live that every single year. And that's really, we return to those things, not necessarily like goals and plans, because we really don't have any. We really have more of a vision and a purpose and a word that drives us.
Yeah. So this that's interesting. And the goal setting that I do is based around process goals and outcome goals. And I say like, hey, listen, we can all pick outcome goals. Like Mrs. Jones comes to me and wants to lose 20 pounds. We don't fully control that. So I'm not big on outcome goals, numbers-based goals. What I'm big on is process goals, which are, what are the action steps that get us there? And I think there's a lot of crossover to what you talk about. If you live your word, everything will come together, right?
Yes, you just nailed it. Because if my word is expand, okay, yeah. How am I going to expand this business that we want to expand? How am I going to expand my capacity to do it all? I'm going to focus on that. Mm-hmm. How am I going to expand, you know, my relationship spiritually? That was a goal, to expand that. And from there, you get your action steps based on those things. And for my wife, like, she picked the word discipline one year. Okay, what are the things I'm going to do to try to bring more discipline? That's where she found your book and so forth. Why to do that. So again, you're not always successful with your word, but it does, it's the frame in which you view the world, and then it helps you focus on what matters most so you can live it.
How do you guys course correct? How is it like, you know, so you know that your wife's, what's your wife's name? Sorry.
Catherine.
So Catherine, your word is discipline for 2017 or 18 or whatever. And you find yourself in March where it's like, are you guys doing a regular audit, or like, do you guys sit down on a quarterly basis, or are you just like, you know, on date night or something, like, hey, you know, Catherine, like, do you just ask about it, or do you say like, hey, honey, you know, it's April now, and you know, you said discipline, and this, that, or the other thing has changed. And I'm just wondering, like, how do you feel about it? Like, is that the kind of the conversations you guys have?
Totally. It's an ongoing conversation of, yeah. Hey, how are you living your word? Hey, I'm doing this with my word. And it's really this ongoing conversation. And like, and then it's like, discipline. I know I'm not being disciplined. I got to work on that. So it's really more of a, just a reminder of what those words are and a check-in.
I love it. I'm going to steal that great idea. I'm so grateful for you sharing that.
Oh, yeah. and make a painting, by the way. You can make a painting on New Year's Eve. It's a great thing to do with your family. Each family member makes a painting of their word. And okay. So you do a painting of your word, and then you put it up somewhere you can see it in the course of the year as a reminder to live that word. We've had people paint rocks, paintings, you know, signs, you name it. We've had a lot of cool ideas that people have done. I was on the Today Show and I shared it, and we got like thousands of people sending in their ideas and what they did with their one word. It was pretty
cool. Amazing. Now, what about on a day-to-day basis? So like, do you have an expand bracelet on or anything? Is it taped on your laptop?
Yeah, a little. Some people get bands. I've had like right now I am looking at a wooden expand that someone sent me as a gift, and I keep it right on my desk.
Have you chosen your word for 2020?
I haven't. I usually do it around after Christmas. Okay. As we approach New Year's, I'll start thinking, reflecting. Yeah. And it's funny. Everyone always asks, how do you find your word? Well, you look in, what's in your heart, what's missing, what do you want to focus on? You look up, okay, what's my word? I'm open to it. The universe, God, whatever it is for you. Like, all right, I'm open to it. I'll receive it. Bring me that word. And it's funny. It always comes in some way.
That's really great. I appreciate it. Well, when you do, shoot me a message. I just would love to know about it, okay?
Sure, I'd love to share with you.
Awesome. Okay, so now you mentioned something. We were talking about relationships and you talked about the power of communication. And you said when there is no communication, what happens? I'm not exactly sure the phrase you use, but I know that, and I'm applying this to work-related stuff now, is that if I don't communicate to my team members and they hear something, they create little stories in their head to fill the void. Is that a pretty good, accurate description of what happens when
you nailed it? You nailed it. When there's a void in communication, negativity in all its forms will fill it. Rumors, gossip, fear, uncertainty.
Perfect. So let's talk about the power of communication and the role of positive leadership and really thinking about the entrepreneur, the middle manager, the C-level executive. Let's kind of go nitty gritty business wise here, John. And, you know, cause we have a lot of high performing people who most people are at that level that are listening to this show. So let's talk about communication and positivity and leadership, and maybe wrap that into a story of where you came into a company. They need a little bit of a kick in the butt in this area. And then they came back to you a few months or weeks or even a year later and said, "Hey, John, thank you. Here's what's happened."
Well, when we work with a company, we talk to their leadership. We always focus on the four C's: communication, connection, commitment, and caring. So as a leader, it starts with great communication. And as we talked about, it's everything. So it starts there. And so you can evaluate yourself with your team in a very simple way. On a scale of 1 to 10, how well do I communicate with you? And ask your team members, how well you communicate on a scale of 1 to 10? And then ask them, what would make it a 10? You're going to get so many great ideas and great feedback on what you can do to improve your communication. Also, do this with yourself before you even ask them. Evaluate yourself and then compare the two. This will give you an idea of how self-aware you are.
Yeah, some radical candor, right?
Right. But most leaders will rate themselves, ask their people, get some ideas. And then the idea is just implement a few of those things. You will see your communication improve dramatically from there. And here's the key. One-on-one communication is always where we need to improve. We're pretty good communicating in groups collectively, but the key is to communicate one-on-one. So what I ask leaders to do, I challenge them to connect and communicate with one person a day. Try to pick one person a day on your team or one person that you lead and communicate with them in a meaningful way. It might be just 5 to 10 minutes, but if you have these ongoing 5 to 10 minute meetings with people, over time, you're going to develop a better relationship with them. You're going to be developing a better team with them, and you're going to see improved results as well. Because how can you lead someone if you don't know them? How can you motivate someone if you don't know what motivates them? I tweeted this the other day. I'm not big on annual reviews. I'm really big on the ongoing process of developing a relationship with the people that you lead. Andy Stanley said it best: rules without relationship lead to rebellion. So you got to create that relationship through great communication, and that begins the process of creating a great relationship.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Really great stuff. I mean, it's great that, you know, you had the mentor of Ken Blanchard. I mean, that guy's, you know, was top of the game. So perfect stuff. Now, did we get everything on those four C's?
Well, connection is where you now earn trust. You develop a greater relationship. So it's not just about communicating. It's about communicating to connect, to develop emotional and psychological safety. People need to feel like you are connected to them, that you have their best interests at heart. If we look at all the Gallup studies and the Gallup surveys on engagement, it comes down to a relationship. Does my manager care about me is one of the questions. Do I have a best friend at work? Are the people at work involved and interested in my career growth and my progress? So these kind of questions all go back to the human nature of, do you care about me and can I trust you? And that's where connection happens. I was in Dave Roberts' office, the manager of the Dodgers, and I worked with the Dodgers for 3 years, and, I'm in there during spring training, you know, I just saw how he connected with people. Now, if fast forward, right before the postseason, in walks one of his players. He gets up, gives the guy a big giant bear hug. It was a 5 to 10 second hug. Yeah. It was like the hug you would give a long lost son. They're smiling, they're laughing. He walked out. I said, "Dave, that is awesome. Tell me about that." He said he comes in every day for a hug. So I give him a hug. I watched as he then went around the building, walked with him. He connected with each guy on his team throughout the day. Unbelievable. And he builds a connected team by communicating, connecting in a deeper way. And it's no accident that that guy who we hugged several weeks later, I saw hit several home runs to propel them towards the World Series.
That's amazing.
That's what it looks like. And that's like, I had a window to see what it really looks like when a manager connects with one of their team members and how that impacts that person's performance. So once you feel psychologically safe and emotionally safe, you now feel free to commit. You feel free to go for it because you're not worried about ridicule or failing because you feel loved. And once you feel loved, you can perform at a higher level.
And so are you then asking your team to rank you on the 1 to 10, and how can you get to a 10?
For connection as well, yes.
Okay, great.
And then we move to commitment. How committed are you? And this is where we all need to improve, right? So many times as a leader, as a person, we are very self-focused, right? I always tell people, if you want to see how self-focused you are, next time you take a picture with a group of friends, look at the picture. Who do you look at first? Right, we always focus on ourselves first. We look at ourselves in that picture. We are naturally.
Can I ask you a question, John?
Yeah.
Define commitment. Like, so commitment to what?
Committed to your team.
Got it.
And to their growth and their progress. Because here's the deal: when you help them improve, you improve. When you help them grow, you grow. And again, it's natural for us to be self-focused, to focus on ourselves. Cause when we're busy and stressed, we activate the reptilian part of our brain. We're not thinking about our team and their growth. We're thinking about how can I just get through the day and survive today? So you can't be a great leader when you are narcissistic, stressed, and self-focused. So the busyness and stress causes you to focus on yourself. And what you have to realize is there's the other part of the brain. I call it the positive dog part of the brain. That's the part we activate when we practice gratitude and love and prayer and meditation. And we have a quarter second, the research shows, to override the reptile with the positive dog. But if you've ever said something you wish you didn't say, your reptile ate your positive dog. Where you
positive
hurry,
dog, that's so true, man. I got labs, so I know what it, you know, positive of dog.
You know, the love of that dog, right? That's what we want to strive to be like. So instead of busyness and stress, we want to be intentional and we want to make sure that we're focusing on the relationship and committing to those people. So it looks like when I get home and I've had a long day at work and I'm busy, and yet my wife, you know, wants a neck massage. I called up Ken Blanchard. Ken, my wife wants a neck massage. Ken, I feel like I deserve the massage. What should I do? He said, John, give her a massage. If you don't, someone else will. And so that night I gave my wife a neck massage, and I admit it was out of fear. So that was not out of commitment. But then
I love how you had the opportunity to call Ken Blanchard, ask Ken, the legendary Ken Blanchard, any question in the world. And you're like, should I give her a neck massage? That's great, man. That's great.
But then
I'm sure you asked him other things. But
oh yeah. We talk often. I'm having him on podcast actually in about a week or two. So the thing is though, then I worked on being committed to her, started helping out with laundry around the house and all these little things that she needed help with. So to me, it's like serving and sacrifice in some way.
The servant leader.
To your team. Hey, it's going to have to cost you something when you actually serve someone else, when you actually lead someone. As leaders, we always need to go first. There's that book, You Need to Eat Last, but we need to go first. You have to show that you are committed if you want commitment from your team.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And so the last one.
Care. And I think that just really speaks for itself. Like you won't connect, you won't communicate, and you won't commit if you don't care. So great leaders care more. They care more about their team. They care more about their mission. They care more about their progress, their success. Now, not every leader, right, has all these C's. Steve Jobs, let's say, probably didn't care much about all of his employees. People would say that they didn't feel like he cared. But man, he cared so much about the mission. He cared so much about what they were producing. He cared about excellence that those who cared about the things he cared about bought into it. So as a great leader, you have to care. But he would have been even stronger and better and left an even greater legacy, if that's even possible, he would have if he would have truly cared about the people in his life.
That's powerful, man. Powerful. So good.
Hey, Think and Grow Rich talked about all of these principles and missed one thing. A friend of mine, actually, Brian Buffini, who's the top real estate coach in the world, he said, you know, I looked at Think and Grow Rich. I looked at the Energy Bus. You know that you have all the same principles except one. He said, you added one that they didn't have. You added love your passengers as one of the principles. Think and Grow Rich, all the people that were studied, they all had success, but their personal lives were all in shambles because they were so focused on their rich part that they actually had relationships that had become dysfunctional and they destroyed their relationships. So I think you aren't a true success unless you have the people around you who love you and are successful as well.
Oh man, that's amazing. That's amazing. Love this, John. Love this. Now I wanted to go back in time and talk about how you broke into this because, and I know a bit of the story, but I think everybody needs to hear it because in this day and age, social media has allowed everybody become an expert and everybody, you know, let's be honest, the messages are a dime a dozen these days. And you broke into a positivity, leadership, culture building world where this is much more popular these days. Now you did the work to do it. And I want you to walk through the work that you did to do this with you know, the 80 talks and all that sort of stuff, with the expectations you had in your mind of the long term, what kept you going through the days when there was the five people in the audience on the 28 city tour, and so that you can download to our listeners the understanding they must have that it's not going to be overnight, that it doesn't matter if you saw somebody on Instagram who's 5 years younger than you and has been in business only 3 months. That's not necessarily your situation. And here's what you need to consider. So take us through. John writes this book, wants to break into this world, and here's how it happened.
So I spoke everywhere and anywhere. Who would ever have me speak? I did it.
Yeah.
I gave about 80 free talks initially. Yeah. And then I was like $500 a talk, but I would market, I would promote. I have hundreds of emails still on my computer that I sent out to people. Hey, I would love to come talk to your company. Love to come talk to your organization. I had a vision of what I wanted to create. I had a mission to do it. I think that's really key. And I knew what I wanted to build. And it really was about the long term. It wasn't about, you know, the get rich quick thing. It's like you have built your success over time by doing the work, by caring about the people that you're helping, by being focused on your message and your mission. Same thing with me. It was really over time, showing up every day, doing the work, practicing three words. I think everyone could get these three words and focus on them. And it's amazing how you'll create success from it. Love, serve, and care. This is from my book, The Carpenter. If you love what you do, and you have to love it or else you'll never be great at it. If you love what you do and the love and you love the people that you get to work with and you want to impact, that's going to take you far. Then you have to serve them. Find some way to serve them, to coach them, to mentor them, to guide them. You truly have to be in a place of service to them because it can't be about you. If it's about them, they will help you grow. They will tell others about you. You will grow your platform when you are adding value, not focusing on your own value. Your own value goes up when you add value to others. So it's about serving others, and it's really showing you care, which we just talked about, showing that you truly care, going out of your way. So my thing was, even though I started speaking to larger groups over time, I still made time for that one person who would reach out and ask a question, who was facing a challenge. Now, it wasn't about, hey, I want to write this book. Can you help me write this book? That's not my calling to help you write a book. My calling is if you're going through a challenge, if you're dealing with negativity, your child is struggling and maybe they're suicidal, I will talk to your child. I will talk to you. I will encourage you and I will give you some kind of tip to help you along the way. That is the person I will always make time for on this journey. So I did that. And so over time, I'd be at events and people would come see me and be like, I reached out to you 5 years ago and you responded. And it was those kind of things over time that I think paved the way for success. You won't see that on the balance sheet. You won't see that on what I did at the end of the year, but you'll see it in me investing in the root every day. And when you invest in the root, you get the fruit. Focus on the fruit. Focus on the fruit.
What are you dropping some rhymes up there from Long Island?
Hey, how you doing? Focus, focus on the fruit, ignore the root, and the tree dies. And so for me, that's what it's about. So fear came up. Unworthiness came up often. Yeah. I didn't always feel worthy to do this. I remember getting on stage and feeling like, who am I to be here sharing this message? And yet I would always return to my purpose. Okay, I'm here because I have this purpose and I have to go do this work. I tell people all the time, if you have something valuable to share and you know you're here to make a difference, well, your purpose is greater than your challenges. You have to sell with purpose because if you don't do it, then you're not able to benefit the people who benefit from your message, from your work, from the gift that you have. So you have an obligation to actually share your stuff with people.
Powerful, man. Powerful. It's like you're reading my freaking notes, man, because I was going to ask you about doubt, about who am I to write these books? Who am I to give these talks? And you said this to Bedros on our Empire podcast when he interviewed you. And you said, why would people listen to me? And your answer was, wait, I'm worthy. I am worthy to share this message. So can you iterate a little bit more on that? Because that is something that a lot of people that I work with struggle with is, who am I? Imposter syndrome. There's all these other experts out there. Who am I to do this? So just, you know, even if you just say, this is what I told myself in that situation, what can you tell our listeners?
As you are pursuing greatness, as you are pursuing a business, if you're an entrepreneur, and I know many of your, you know, audience members are entrepreneurs, you will always be attacked in the place of your identity. And your identity is so often tied to your success, to your performance. So it's important to understand that you will be attacked in those places. But here's the key. Realize that your identity has nothing to do with your performance. Your identity is who you are in the inside. And once you truly understand that you're worthy, that you're here to do something meaningful, that you, I always ask people, do you want to be great? Do you want to be great? And everyone says, yes. I said, why do you want to be great? Like, I don't know. I just want to be great. The reason why you want to be great is because you know that you have greatness within you. There is a desire to be great because there's greatness to be found. And you would never have that desire if you weren't meant to do something great. So the fact that you are, but then we have these voices that say, you're not great. You're not enough. You're not successful. And that is the battle that every human being will go through on this journey of life as they try to create their success. And so you have to not listen to those voices, as we talked about earlier. You have to understand where they're coming from. You have to win the battle of your mind by knowing you are worthy. So every day, what I would do, I was get up, I wrote about this in The Carpenter, and I would say, I expect great things to happen today. I trust in a greater plan for my life. I accept all the people that want to work with me and benefit from my gifts and talents. I trust that God has a plan that's greater than my plan, and I am here to make a difference and serve others. And I would say that every day. And it was amazing because I'd come back from my walk and there'd be a call like, hey, you got a request to speak here. It'd be like crazy how often that happened like that. I was putting out there what I wanted to create. And the more worthy I felt to do it, to share it, the more that led to greater success. See, I believe people get ideas all the time. I believe they get impulses all the time that they're meant to do something. And then they poo-poo it or they don't believe it's possible. So it never happens. And so they never receive the life that is meant for them because they poo-poo it. They don't believe it. Your job is not to discount anything. Your job is to believe it's possible, go work at it, and then see what happens.
That's amazing, dude. That's amazing. So now, man, I could go on for hours and hours and hours. Let's do a quick rundown of The Coffee Bean for our listeners. You know, they need to go and get this book that you've written. You were telling me it's one of the most popular ones that you've written, and tell us what it is. You know, go back to the start. We've talked a little bit about it. Tell us what it is, why they need to read it, and what's the big outcome they'll get from doing it.
Well, it's that analogy we talked about earlier, and the idea is just to understand that when you see yourself as a coffee bean, that you're not going to be impacted by the environment anymore. You're not going to blame situations and events and circumstances and your past. You're going to let go of all of it and understand that you have the power within you to transform the world outside you. And that the more you think that way and understand that way, you will become a powerful force in this world to have greater success and, more importantly, make a greater impact. So it's a story about a young man, Abe, who learns this lesson from his science teacher. And then we follow Abe's journey across his life. It's really a 20-minute read. It's such a quick read. The goal was to really teach this lesson, to shift people's perspective and understanding and change how they see their world and how they see themselves inside to impact the world. And from there, it's been unbelievable. The impact has been incredible with a 20-minute read illustrated. So it's like a children's book for adults. And yet it teaches such a powerful message. So I just love it. It's based on a guy, Damon West, who told me his story. And I actually heard about his story from Dabo over at Clemson. I've worked with Clemson for 8 years now. Worked with them from the beginning, right? As Dabo was building that program. So I've seen firsthand a leader create success from the inside out. I've seen him believe in his players more than they believe in themselves. I've seen him realize his vision of building this national championship program. It's one of the coolest experiences of my life to watch this leader build it and then be a part of it. And so he had Damon West speak to his team about the coffee bean. I come up there about a week later and Dabo tells me about this message. And as soon as he told me, I was like, boom, that needs to be a book. We need to write the coffee bean. And I reached out to Damon and we literally wrote that book in about a week.
Amazing. 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 All right. So I hope.
By the way, I got to tell you real quick, Damon was in prison. He was in prison for 7 years, got addicted to meth, burglarizing homes, and got put in jail, 65-year sentence, gets out in seven because of good behavior. He was taught this lesson of the coffee bean by Mr. Jackson, who think of a Morgan Freeman type character.
Oh, yeah. From Shawshank.
Yep, who taught him this lesson. And it was like a real life story where he's like, you know what? I can't change in prison. I have to change prison. And that's why he got out in 7 years. And I always tell people when I tell them the story, I said, you think your workplace is bad? This guy was in prison for 7 years. And he had to transform his environment, and he did. So now he's out. He's been out 3 years. And here's what's cool about this guy. Like, he literally is still on probation. Before he goes out of town, he has to check in with his parole officer. He has to go make a difference, impact all these like Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, all these amazing teams, come back, and he's got to pee in a cup to make sure that he wasn't doing drugs. And so it keeps him humble. Yeah, it's a great story.
John, was there anything that I asked you today that you haven't talked about very frequently?
Most of the things you asked, I talk about. I don't really talk about my wife. It's one of the first times I've actually talked about my wife and our relationship and all of that. Yeah, that was a unique thing to talk about that. And I hope I didn't ramble, but it was just something that definitely haven't shared a lot before.
I'll tell you what, this was one of the, I don't do a lot of interviews, but this was definitely one of the most conversational that I've had. And I could ask you a million other things, but I have time for one last question. And I'll ramble a little bit so you can think about it, because the question is this: what is the one question that you want people to ask themselves every single day in the John Gordon voice? So what, you know, it's kind of like that thing. And John Gordon's like your little coach every single day, and he's asking you this one question: what is it going to be? So I've found that that's very helpful, and I'm going to turn that over to you now, John. What is the one thing that our listeners will benefit from if they ask this question to themselves every single day in the smooth John Gordon radio voice?
What matters most?
What matters most?
Ask yourself each day, what matters most? Because when you know what matters most, you'll focus on it. Distractions are the enemy of greatness. Mm. And so we often get distracted in life. We get distracted by all these things that don't matter, and we don't focus on what does matter. So when you focus every day on what matters most, you will do the things that create this great foundation, that build your life, that build your success, that build up others when you know what matters most. If I would add one, it would also be, what kind of legacy do you want to leave? I think they go together, because knowing how you want to be remembered helps you decide how to live today.
Well, what's John Gordon's answer to that question?
Oh, it's very simple. I imagine an amazing funeral. I always tell my brother, I'm living towards a great funeral. He thinks I'm crazy.
My mentor, Mark Ford, says, do the obituary or the funeral exercise. You know, what are people going to say?
I have this amazing funeral where people are there and people come from all over. And they tell my kids the difference that either a book I wrote or a talk I gave or a question I answered made a difference in their life. And God willing, you know, it happens a while from now, but I really just want people to tell my kids the difference I made in their life. And my kids will understand that, you know what, that was my dad. He had this impact, but I will also want them to know that I was also there for them as well.
Powerful, my man. Powerful. I know you're on that track. So everybody should go to johngordon.com and get started there. But where else should they go, John? How can they get the right books for them and interact or send you feedback about how it's helped them?
Yeah, I'd love that. Just johngordon.com, johngordon.com. Also, I interact with a lot of people on Instagram and Twitter at johngordon11, johngordon11 on Instagram and Twitter.
Awesome. And you have your own podcast. Can you tell us where they can find that on iTunes?
That is Positive University. So just find it on iTunes, Positive University. And I am proud to have had you, Craig, on it. So can't wait to people to listen to that interview where I got to ask you all these great questions about discipline, about life. And again, you've made a huge impact on my wife. And, you know, again, if she ever calls you one day, just know who she is.
She can come to my funeral and say great things about me.
She will. She will.
That's awesome, John. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Everybody go to johngordon.com, get the coffee bean, get the energy bus, share this with your kids and your business and change people's lives. All right. Thank you, John. So grateful for this, man. I mean, it's going to be really cool to meet him in person because he's a great speaker. I'm going to learn a lot from him. I'll learn a lot about my personal life from him, about what to do. I mean, that vision exercise that, you know, the word of the year is super powerful. I've never done it before. I had a theme for the year, you know, be the best at less rather than mediocre at more, but I'm not sure what it's going to be for 2020, that one word. So I'm looking forward to doing that. Now, let me know what you thought of today's show. Head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star ranking and a review. We'd really appreciate it. Man, then go to johngordon.com, buy his books, and then send me an Instagram direct message at @RealCraigValentine. Let me know what you thought of today's show or email me at support@earlytorise.com. Man, that was just really, really cool. All right, so we want to hear from you, and we want you to make 2020 the best year ever. And if you want to go to the next level, like if you're like John and you were like, yeah, you know, he got coaching from Ken Blanchard and from his wife. Now, if you don't have those positive role models in your life, those positive people who give you that accountability, well, listen, here's what to do next. Go to craigballantyne.com to apply to work with me at my next coaching event near you. I'm going to make you unstoppable through the power of clarity, vision, structure, discipline, strategy, execution, and accountability. And we will see you soon. So just head over to craigballantyne.com, and I can't wait to talk to you in 2020.